Good morning again, everyone. We are going to call the investment committee meeting to order. If I could have Winter take the roll call, please.
Chair DeBrava?
Here.
Vice Chair Geddes?
Here.
Regent Arascata?
Here.
Regent Perkins?
Here.
Regent Tarkanian?
Here.
You have a quorum present. Advisory members, Mr. Garcia? Mr. Byrne?
Mark Densler is here. Dean Byrne is the past chair for UNR, and I am the current chair for the investment committee.
Great. Thank you.
And excuse me, Randy Garcia. I am present. I was on mute. Excuse me.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. Back to you, Chair DeBrava.
Thank you, Winter. We will go to public comment. Do we have any public comment in Reno?
There's none in Reno, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any public comment in Elko?
There is no public comment in Elko at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And how about Las Vegas? Any public comment?
None in Las Vegas.
Thank you. We will go to item number two, the minutes. Do I have a motion regarding the minutes?
Move approval.
And I believe that was Regent. Okay. Winter, do you have the first and second on that motion?
Move to approve.
Was the first Regent Arascata and the second Regent Perkins?
I believe so.
Sure.
Sounds good.
We'll go with that.
And do we? Okay. Thanks, everyone, for your indulgence. Do we have any discussion regarding those minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any nays? The motion passes. Chair's report, not much to mention. Obviously, we realize this committee's importance. Especially as we go through world events like the pandemic, and now we have conflict in other parts of the world. So we will just go to item number four, operating pool performance, discussion, and recommendations. I'm actually going to turn over to CFO Klinger, if he could help tee up this item and introduce speakers.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. For the record, Andrew Klinger, Chief Financial Officer. And I'll just point the committee members and other regents on the call to the supplemental material on item four. There you'll see an executive summary of the performance of the operating pool through the end of February. As well, I'll point out that on page two, there is a recommendation in there for a rebalancing, and you can see on the second page that request. So this item, we do recommend action on this item to approve those reallocations. And so with that, I will turn it over to Wendy Walker from Cambridge & Associates to talk about the performance.
Thank you so
much. Walker, before you, Ms. Walker, before you begin, I didn't know if Regent Perkins had a question. Regent Perkins?
If this is an appropriate time, yes, I do have a question. It's about the benchmarks. When was the last time they were like examined or re-examined? And do we need to do that periodically? Because I know the benchmarks were set quite a while ago. So have they changed because of the, or should they change because of the environment that we're in now versus then? Sort of that's kind of my question.
Sure. Happy to address it. It's a good question. The answers are a little bit different between the endowment and the operating fund. So maybe I'll just take them independently. So since we're talking about the operating fund right now, this is these benchmarks have been static for quite a long time. I think 2011 was the last time that they were changed, but they're presented in every semi-annual report to the committee. Since the strategy of this pool has remained consistent over that time, we've had no recommendations to change the policy targets or change the benchmarks. We're comfortable with these benchmarks. It's a very simple portfolio. You know, it's highly oriented towards cash and fixed income securities because of the operating liquidity needs for the system. And the long-term pool is a largely passively managed pool. So, you know, those benchmarks remain appropriate. That's for the operating fund. On the endowment, we did a deep dive of the long-term strategic policy back in 2016 when the OCIO mandate started. And there have been two modest changes to the policy targets and benchmarks over the past couple of years. Or I should say, I think one was in early 2019 and one was in 2020. And then the last time the overall policies were reviewed, the statement of investment policies were reviewed by the committee and voted upon was just this last fall. The benchmarks did not change at that time because there was no shift in the policy. Does that address the question, or are there follow-on questions to that?
Actually, that answered it pretty thoroughly. I appreciate that.
Okay.
So I guess I want to bring something up in new business, then maybe it's time to examine those benchmarks and then, you know, bring that back to the committee next time.
Gladly. We could do a deep dive on that. Before we go through the performance and our rebalancing recommendations, just given Chair DeBrava's commentary, I thought it might be helpful to just briefly touch on some market environment slides that I think inform our rebalancing recommendations. If the committee thinks that's a good use of time, I might suggest that we start on page 10 of the operating fund materials, which looks at performance for the month of February and calendar year 22 to date, which is just 2 months. At the time that we published these materials, you know, stocks had fallen in February, which built on losses in January, no surprise to anyone in this room. What I think is interesting and informs our rebalancing recommendations is that different geographies and asset classes have responded to the war in Ukraine differently. The resulting, you know, both the direct effects of the war and the sanctions are being felt by different geographies differently, and that's been reflected in portfolio movements. As one example, U.S. trade is fairly limited with both Russia and Ukraine, and so as part of what we often see as a flight to quality during big market sell-offs, U.S. stocks actually rose after the invasion. And they recovered from what had previously been a larger loss. And in contrast, European stocks, because Europe relies on Russia for almost 50% of its natural gas and 25% of its oil, European stocks fell more significantly in February, and they're now down almost 10% for 2022 to date. Now, bonds, which have typically been stable or sometimes slightly positive during periods of crisis, they've really oscillated this year. Markets have been trying to digest the offsetting impacts of war, and you know, with that comes higher commodity prices. We've been seeing higher inflation, along with slower growth, slower economic activity. But then there's also the offsetting force of higher inflationary pressures and recent, you know, pretty strong economic data that we're seeing on the macroeconomic and microeconomic and corporate side. So far this year, the U.S. bond index is down 3%. So it hasn't given us that kind of boost that we often see from fixed income during crisis periods. So that's kind of a high-level backdrop through the end of February, which was what was included in these materials. And for a brief update through through March through yesterday. Global equities, somewhat counterintuitively, have surged over the past 2 weeks. They've, you know, they first stabilized and then rebounded pretty significantly last week, up 5% for the week and up a little more this week. Part of that comes from central bank announcements, where it seems like they're making very strong public commitments that they plan to keep inflation in check. There are ongoing Russia-Ukraine peace talks, no real positive news out of that, but the markets seem to be taking some comfort in perhaps stability in these areas. Bonds, bond yields have continued to grow, increase just as of this morning. They're up even higher. The 10-year yield is now at 2.5%, so bond prices in our portfolios are dropping. And Chinese equities has been the big news this month, where they truly took a large plunge last week when China announced increased lockdowns across the country as part of their zero COVID policy. There are concerns about Chinese ties with Russian companies and whether those will be subject to sanction as well. And then there's also threats of delisting Chinese tech firms from U.S. exchanges. So, you know, this month now, global equities are back up 1% for the month to date, which brings the calendar year to date returns to only a 6% decline. It's still a decline, but it's you know, we have reached a recent bottom and have come up a little bit. So, you know, given all this ongoing uncertainty, I think it's a reasonable question about why the markets have stabilized and rebounded slightly. And we don't know if this is the bottom and we're going to keep going up. More likely, I think we would expect ongoing choppiness. But on page 11, we show an analysis of some major geopolitical events over the past several decades. And I want to caveat that no two of these events are ever the same, but markets have tended to recover fairly quickly, even when the situation seems very dire, like the Gulf War, 9/11. A lot of it depends on the broader economic context, more so than the geopolitical event itself. So, for example, 9/11, that occurred when we were still in the middle of the telecom and media downturn from the year 2000, when the market sold off. And so, you know, that context, that broader market context, probably exacerbated the market reaction. So this year so far, the market reaction has been pretty muted. You know, it feels dire when we're in the middle of this, but markets being down 6% is well within the range of normal market activity. This is against the recent backdrop of above average economic growth of the economy and also strong corporate earnings. So we think that there is better stability for markets to remain stabilized. Of course, this is not a prediction, because the big question is whether this Ukraine action is the mark of some permanent or larger geopolitical change. And it clearly has exposed some over-optimization of global supply chains that are probably going to we're going to see ongoing market and economic effects. So just wanted to give that high-level context for our rebalancing recommendations, and I might pause for questions. Okay, super.
Currently, yeah, go ahead, Ms. Walker. No questions that I can see, at least
great.
On the queue here.
Great. One final slide I wanted
Can you explain markets to me again? All right, sorry. Sorry, Chair.
I might pause. Suggest that we pause very briefly also on page 39 before we get to our rebalancing recommendations. Page 39 of the materials show over time the reserve, the reserve account balance or deficit as a percentage of the operating pool. This data is through the end of January, where we were at 5.9%. Our estimates is that this dropped below 5% in February with a February sell-off, but now is slightly above 5% with the March stabilization and slight rebound. So just wanted to point out that, you know, you can see in this chart that back in 2015, 2018, 2020, You know, we touched near zero, a 0% reserve, and just wanted to remind the committee that should there be ongoing volatility, we may drop below that we may drop into deficit territory. And again, with the spending rule, that would mean turning off the distributions to the campuses after we go through the market stabilization account. So just want to be realistic that when the market is as volatile as it is today, this is a real risk. But turning to our rebalancing
No, go ahead and proceed. I'm sorry.
Great. So our rebalancing recommendations on page, sorry, I've lost my page numbering. On page 8, we are, so first of all, the good news is since we printed these materials, the pool is up further. The total operating fund at the bottom at the bottom of this page is up 0.6% for the month of March through yesterday. The long-term pool is up 1% for the month of March through yesterday. And so our rebalancing recommendations really reflect our rebalancing discipline. Right now, amidst this uncertainty, our house view is that we should remain relatively close to policy targets, adding to assets that have underperformed, trimming, locking in gains from those that have been stronger performers. So we're recommending redeploying $10 million into the Vanguard Developed Market Index and sourcing half of that, $5 million, from Vanguard US, and the other half equally from our two long-term bond managers.
Thank you, Ms. Walker, for the recommendation. And I was just going to touch base again with CFO Klinger. At this stage of the meeting, would you want a motion to proceed with that recommendation, CFO Klinger, or is there another motion that we will take?
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. For the record, Andrew Klinger, Chief Financial Officer. My recommendation is that the committee take a motion on this item to approve the reallocations as recommended by Cambridge and Associates.
Thank you, CFO Klinger.
I'll do that.
We have a motion by Regent Perkins, and I think there's a second, Regent Geddes.
Yes, sir.
Any questions or comments regarding the motion? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing no opposed, the motion carries. We will now move to item 5, endowment pool performance, and we'll have Cambridge Associates. Please.
Oh, the correct pages here. Item 5. So on item 5, I'm looking at page 11. And this is, sorry. There you go. How about now? Updated slides, yes. With the, in item 5, this is performance through January 31, but with the updated performance that we've, that we share, this is taking performance through February month end. I would start again, just highlighting that, you know, through year end, total assets, the total endowment ended at $322 million, but through February, we see that down to $318 million. Obviously, choppy markets in January and February of this year contributed to that negative performance. Through calendar year to date, the total endowment is down 4.7%, slightly behind the policy benchmark by 50 basis points. With the month of February contributing down 1.4%, in line with the benchmark as well. I guess giving the context from looking at last year, what's in the actual item 5, we saw strong absolute and relative performance over the trailing year. really besting the policy benchmark by 4.4% through January. That was the trailing year, and fiscal year to date was up 70 basis points better than the benchmark through January again. Since the OCIO relationship began, the total endowment is sitting at 80 basis points ahead of the policy benchmark, and since the longer period since inception, 20 basis points ahead of the policy benchmark. Legacy assets have performed exceptionally well through the same period, 18.3% better than the policy through the calendar year of 2021. And that includes 8.3% better than the benchmark for the fiscal year to date, again, through January. That number updated through February, we see the fiscal year to date performance down 1.2%, better than the down 2.4% of the policy benchmark. In terms of CA managed assets, we saw that at the end of the year, the calendar year 2021, assets sat around $252 million, and today, and at the end of February, they're sitting at $253 million, with the calendar year to date through February down 5.8%, and with the policy down 5.1%, so slightly lagging the policy benchmark for the calendar year, for just the 2 months of the calendar year. And with the over the longer point since inception, or since the OCIO relationship began, Cambridge assets returned 9.4% compounded annually versus the policy benchmark of 8.2%. So 1.2% of annual compound outperformance there. I would say that let me pause there for any questions, and I'm happy to move to the next slide for more detail.
Not seeing yes, any please. Questions. You can proceed. Regent Arascada, please.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. On the legacy assets, you're mentioning that the total CNA of the managed asset. So you said in 2021, right now, at the end of 2021, beginning of 22, they're at 254. $254 million, is that correct?
For Cambridge assets.
The Cambridge assets, yes. Or was that 252?
252 through calendar year 2021, correct.
Okay. So from the calendar year of 2016, they've actually decreased? Am I reading this correctly? Because I'm looking at the CNA management assets of 253. I'm on... Yes.
Yeah. So it's just the fiscal year to date.
Okay.
So from June 30th of last year, it's down 0.9%.
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Proceed, please.
Chair DeBrava, this is Randy Garcia. Is it appropriate for me to ask a question at this time? I'm the chair of the UNLV Investment Committee.
Yes, Mr. Garcia, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Question I have is, this is my first call and participation on this on a call such as this. Is it possible for Cambridge, when they're going over these numbers, instead of looking at them as an individual on the screen, but to actually show the report and actually use their cursor to reference the data that they're talking about, so we can follow along as opposed to hear only, but we can see on the report the data that they're referencing?
You know, Mr. Garcia, that's a good question, and maybe we can work with CFO Klinger for future presentations that we might be able to provide that.
Absolutely.
I know that would be helpful, at least to me, so thank you.
Understood, thank you.
Thank you.
So I might then just jump to this is slide 13, showing fiscal year to date performance, and I have this updated through February as well, showing again the policy benchmark down 1.8% compared to the performance of the endowment down 0.8%. Of the operating fund down 8.8%. That shows the outperformance of 100 basis points there, and how we get that primarily that's driven by the overweight that we had in our private investments, specifically to venture capital, that you know really performed well through 2021. And you know, just as a caveat, the performance that we have to for private investments is actually marked through September 30. So not a full year of private investment performance, but again, still the main driver of outperformance in the portfolio during that period, fiscal year to date. Jumping to the next slide, we'll show performance over the longer OCIO track record since March of 2017. Again, with private investments lagged through September 30, 2021, we see that the policy benchmark performed at 9.3% performance, whereas the portfolio is at 11.2. Again, the drivers of that performance are really manager selection and the structure of our investments, which again were tilted towards venture capital investments, which really outperformed during 2021. And I'll pause there if there are any more questions for clarification.
Super, thanks. Wendy Walker.
Ms. Perkins? I was going to say Regent Perkins might have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do. I remember at the last investment meeting, we brought up that some of the institutions like UNLV, UNR, their endowments were performing a little bit better. Can we have that? How does it compare now?
Thanks for that good question.
Ms. Walker or CFO Klinger, please go ahead.
Sure. So we most recently prepared that comparison as of June 30th, due to the lag that EJ mentioned of the private investments portfolio. We don't yet have data through December 31st for private investments, which is a meaningful chunk of the portfolios, but we could prepare that comparative analysis for the system, UNR and UNLV, to prepare and once the 12/31 data is complete.
Okay, thank you.
Chair DeBrava, CFO Klinger, just to add in, based on Ms. Walker's comments, what we'll do is once we have that data, we can send it out to the committee and the board just as information item. We don't have to wait for the next committee meeting. So we'll send that out as soon as we get it.
Mark Dunsler here.
That's helpful.
Mark Dunsler here, representing UNR. I do have our preliminary December 31 information if that's useful for the committee at this time and to answer Regent Perkins' question.
And with Ms. Regent Perkins, if you would agree, why don't we wait till we have both institutions and CFO Klinger can put that in a formal information that he can forward to everyone, if that's okay with you, Regent Perkins?
Oh, yes, Mr. Chair. I think that's probably best so we can compare apples to apples.
Very good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ms. Walker, go ahead and proceed, please.
Great. So just wanted to give a brief update on the transition of the Russell Investment assets. I might suggest that we turn to page 21 for a view of the overall asset allocation for the endowment. You'll note in the 12/31/21 asset allocation column, we have a green box around the bottom with this elevated cash level. Russell Investments liquidated the majority of their portfolio in late December. Cambridge, due to the market volatility, we've been redeploying that cash in tranches through January, February, and March, bringing that cash back down to more normalized levels. As of February 28th, there was about $9 million left still invested in Russell Investment underlying holdings. A big chunk of that, $6.6 million, will redeem as of March 31st. That's in a real estate fund that had quarterly liquidity. So we'll expect to receive those proceeds hopefully during the month of April and redeploy those towards the end of April. But in the meantime, we would expect to see, as of we have several transactions teed up for the end of this month to redeploy the current excess cash. So going forward, we would expect to see cash back at more normalized levels. Otherwise, the transition has been going smoothly from our perspective. You know, Cambridge has been handling all of the administrative logistics. So we hope that NG staff has not had to bother with that at all. And overall, I would also just note that during the transition period, while we have had some excess cash, we've been seeking to maintain overall risk exposures of the total endowment in line with policy benchmarks. In this kind of environment, when fixed income is offering very low yields and, in fact, recently negative returns, it's actually been somewhat beneficial to hold cash instead of fixed income, just given the market volatility. I might pause there and see if there are any other questions about asset allocation or other topics on the endowment. Great.
Seeing none, proceed, please.
I think that's all we had for item five.
Item five. Okay. I think we will conclude item five, that's information only. And we will move to item six, the annual review of investment pools. CFO Klinger.
Mr. Chair, sorry, this is Regent Geddes. And I'm not sure I'm not sure if it's for new business or this previous item we just wrapped up, but I just wanted to get a sense as far as our investments in Russia and Belarus and what we might have out there that we may want to consider divesting from in the future. I don't know if that's appropriate for right now or if that's for the next meeting, but
I'm happy to address it now. It's a very topical question that we were prepared for pretty much. We started doing this analysis back in February on behalf of all of our clients.
Ms. Walker?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ms. Walker, if I may, so would that fit into item five? I just want to make sure that we're following open meeting law on that. Yes, so we'll stay in item five, and please go ahead and address that question. Thank you.
Terrific. So in the endowment, which is what we're covering in item five, we estimate that Cambridge Managed Assets had 0.3% exposure to Russian equities. It's only through two managers. What we're seeing across the board is that since the major index providers have removed Russia from the indices and trading has effectively stopped in both in Russia and in Russian securities that are listed in London and New York, most managers have written those positions down to zero. Many have announced plans to exit Russian equities as soon as liquidity permits. So it's infinitesimally small as a part of the endowment. There's zero exposure in the operating fund, just since that pool is invested only in developed markets.
Thank you, Wendy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Regent Geddes. I think now we'll go to item six, the annual review of investment pools. CFO Klinger.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. For the record, Andrew Klinger, Chief Financial Officer. Board policy requires the committee annually to review the allocations in the operating pool between the short-term, intermediate, and long-term pools. And just to refresh the committee, the short-term pool is really there to meet the daily cash flow needs of the system and is generally invested in fixed income securities having a maturity of 1 year or less. The intermediate pool is really there as a reserve or a contingency in the event that we need to draw down beyond the short-term pool, and is invested in fixed income securities, generally having a maturity of 3 years or less. The long-term pool really is, it's anticipated that we won't have to draw funds down out of the long-term pool, and is invested in securities with lower volatility and enhanced investment returns. And so as we reviewed our cash flow and our cash flow needs, what we have found is that the largest one single day cash drawdown was approximately $73 million over a 2 year period. So what that means is currently the amount that we have in both the short term and the intermediate term pools is we have approximately $235 million above that $73 million in the highest daily drawdown of cash. So what we are asking for and what we are recommending from the committee is asking the committee to authorize staff to reallocate up to $150 million out of the short-term and intermediate term pools into the longer-term pools over time to really just sort of rebalance that daily cash needs, because again, that would still leave more than enough to cover what we've analyzed as the highest daily draw over the last 2 years, and we'll obviously continue to look at that. So with that, Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, CFO Klinger. We'll go to Regent Perkins.
I thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering about the physical, the actual dollar amount. What were percentages considered? Like if the every day, the short term dropped below a certain amount, was there a percentage ever considered, or is this the amount, is that going to be enough or for like the next 2 years, or are there predictions that maybe we might want to use a percentage, or do we think about that, or and how did that come about?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Regent Perkins. As we look at the intermediate and the short-term pool, we really do look at those in a fixed dollar amount. And again, it's really based on our projections for what the cash flow needs of the system are. Now, there are allocations in the long-term pool based on percentages, but in those, in the short-term and intermediate-term pool, it's really based on what we think is an amount sufficient to cover the daily cash needs as well as any potential contingency. You know, if an institution is planning to draw down funds for capital construction or that sort of thing, then that would need to be taken into consideration, and we would typically hold funds in the intermediate pool to cover those types of activities.
Okay, that's clear as mud. No, I'm teasing. Thank you. Thank you for the answer. I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Regent Chair. Perkins and CFO. Regent Geddes, please.
Yeah, thank you. And I just, as I joked earlier, I don't understand markets. My son, the business major, tries to explain them daily, and I still don't get it. But what is the financial advantage from us taking it from the into the long-term pool? I mean, what returns do we expect by moving this over compared to where they're sitting now?
Yeah, and I think if you look back at the operating pool table, and maybe, Wendy, you can help me here find it. It's in my binder.
In the original or the supplemental?
If you look at the supplemental, you can see the differences. Let me get right to it here. You can see the differences on page.
It's just the rebalancing table.
Okay.
Yep.
Give me just 1 second here.
Go when you go.
Page eight of the operating materials.
Yeah, so if you look at page 8 there, and you look at the column there with estimated performance, you can see under the equities versus, so if you look at the long-term pool, for example, you can see the performance, and this isn't necessarily a good one to look at, because you really need to look at the longer-term performance, because this is through March 16th, the one that's in the supplemental material. So, Wendy, I don't know if you have the longer-term returns in front of you.
Yes, that would be on page 26.
Yeah, I don't have that.
Sorry. So yep. So page 26, if we look at the column, you know, pretty close, third column from the far right, the total operating fund returned 5.6% annualized over the past 10 years. Short-term bonds and cash, it was only 0.5%. And in the current interest rate environment, it's probably going to be lower than that looking ahead. The long-term pool returned 8.5% over that period.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. I would like to go to Vice Chair Carter has a comment or question.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank Mr. Klinger. This is one thing that came up seemingly maybe about a year ago when we were talking about the allocation for short, medium, and long term, and where that figure came from and what percentage needed to be where. And you know, it's nice to actually make some decisions on data that we've had in the past. So I appreciate the work going towards this.
Thank you, Vice Chair Carter. I would entertain a motion.
Regent Perkins, so moved.
Regent second. Perkins has the motion, and I think a second was second. Regent. Is that Regent Tarkanian? Now, if you could call upon Winter, the. You can repeat who the primary and maker of the motion and the second.
Yes, I have Regent Perkins as a first and Vice Chair Geddes as a second.
Thank you. All in favor of the motion, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none opposed, the motion carries. We will go to item 7, management of investment portfolios. CFO Klinger, please.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. For the record, Andrew Klinger, Chief Financial Officer. And item 7 is an update on the approval that the committee gave at its last meeting to transition from the two OCIOs down to the single OCIO. And just a little bit of background, just to refresh the committee, ENCHI went to or established the two OCIOs back in December of 2016. And so as of last year, we had about 4.5 years of data to really look at and see how the two OCIOs performed. And at the request of then Chair Carter, who was chair of the investment committee at the time, we came to the March meeting initially to begin to have these discussions and look at various options on how we wanted to manage the endowment funds. And so with that, with the direction of the committee back in March of 21, we came back in June of 21 and presented several options, retaining the OCIOs, including bringing it in-house, consolidating the OCIO services down to one. And based on the direction from the committee at the time, did further research and analysis, and then came back in September of 21 and made the recommendation at that time to take the OCIO services and consolidate it down to one vendor. And really that decision, I think, primarily was just based on looking at the returns that the two OCIOs had generated over that 4.5 year, almost 5 year period at that point. And when we made the decision to do that, I'll point out that Cambridge had outperformed, if you will, the other OCIO almost to the tune of $30 million over that entire period. So with the direction from the committee in September of 21, we sent a notice of termination to our other OCIO at the time. And then with the approval of the committee, we began to negotiate a new contract with Cambridge moving forward. And in your briefing paper, you will see the rates that we established under that new contract. And so for calendar year 22, it's actually a fixed rate of $561,300 for calendar year 23. It's a fixed rate of $687,900. And then after 23, then it goes back to a calculation based on basis points, which is the same calculation that was under the previous contract. So with those fixed fees for calendar year 22 and 23, we're estimating that we will save $350,000 in fees over the first 2 years of the contract. And obviously, again, I go back to the primary reason for doing it was the rates of return and just simply the performance of the vendor. So we're getting the benefit now of a larger pool, better pricing, at least in the first 2 years. And I think the potential to have better rates of return going forward. And so with that, would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, CFO Klinger. Do we have any questions regarding item 7? Seeing no questions, thank you to the team for working that out, and to former chair of the investment committee, Regent Carter, to help get us to this point. We will go to item 8. This is for possible action. We have handbook revision, statement of investment objectives and policies for the operating fund. CFO Klinger.
Yeah, thank you, Chair DeRava. For the record, Andrew Klinger, Chief Financial Officer. So item 8 is an update to the statement of investment policies for the operating fund. And there are just a couple of minor changes in here that I will highlight. Under B7, which is on page 2, we strike out under the definition under the long-term pool fixed income, and instead of reading the long-term pool, will be invested in fixed income securities that lower volatility. It will simply state the long-term pool will be invested in securities that lower volatility, so we strike that out. Under section C4, under the manager guidelines, we're recommending changing that from the committee reviewing the guidelines to system staff in that section there. On page 5, under E4, again recommending a change from committee to system staff under E4. And then under F, on the distribution policy, the distribution policy currently requires a review of the distribution rates twice a year. What we are recommending is doing that every biennium, so every 2 years. And part of the reason for the change there is that the changes that we made to the distribution policy, I think it's almost been 2 years now since we made it, where we have set an upper limit of 8% in the reserve account. And that to the extent funds exceed that 8%, the excess funds are automatically distributed. If it drops below 3%, then the funds, then the distributions are stopped until that 3% is achieved again. So we think with that mechanism in the policy that it's not necessary to review that as frequently as was previously required. And then the other change in there is that the policy had required a quarterly review by the chair to look at the current surplus and deficit. And given the investment committee meeting schedule, it made more sense to do that semi-annually.
Move approval, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I have a motion by Regent Geddes. Do I have a second?
I'll second that. Regent Arascotta.
Regent Arascotta. Thank you. Any questions? Seeing no questions, all in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. The motion passes. Item 9, Handbook Revision, Statement of Investment Objectives and Policies for the Endowment Fund. CFO Klinger.
Chair DeBrava, for the record, Andrew Klinger, Chief Financial Officer. The changes recommended in the Endowment Fund policies under Item 9 are really related to the change from the two OCIO vendors down to one. The current policy has listed in it the asset allocations, the benchmarks, and liquidity tables that reference both of the vendors, the prior vendor as well as Cambridge. And what we are recommending here is to change language in that section of the policy to really take out references to the vendor and consolidate it down to just one reference for asset allocation, benchmarks, liquidity. And there are also some references in there that just clean up the language where it was referencing two vendors. It now references a single vendor. So that's really the cleanup under Item 9.
Okay, thank you, CFO Klinger. Do I have a motion for that cleanup under Item 9?
Regent Perkins, so moved.
Thank you, Regent Perkins. Do I have a second? That was Regent Geddes.
I heard Regent Tarkanian, Mr. Chair.
Tarkanian. Regent Tarkanian, yes. Thank you. Yes, thank you, Regent Tarkanian. So we have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Thank you, Laura.
Seeing no discussion on the item, all in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. Thank you, CFO Klinger. And that concludes Item 9. We will go to Item 10, New Business.
And Mr. Chair, I think this is Regent Geddes. I think Wendy kind of addressed it as far as Russian Belarus. But for the next meeting, I'd like an update on that. And if we need to take action in regards to that, I would appreciate
Thank you.
The info.
Thank you, Regent,
Regent Perkins, or Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yes,
about the
please.
Benchmarks, I'll re-mention it now. About the benchmarks and re-examining them and maybe coming back with that to the next meeting.
Thank you. Seeing no other new business, we will go to Item 11, public comment. Do we have any public comment in Reno?
There is none in Reno, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any public comment in Elko?
There is none in Elko.
Thank you. Any public comment in Las Vegas?
None in Las Vegas, Mr.
Randy
Chair.
Garcia, I have one comment again.
Yes, please, Mr. Garcia.
Thank you so much, Chairman. I'd like to address this to CFO Klinger. I wanted to ask the question, but as he stated that he is looked at the largest one-day drawdown over the prior 2 years in terms of cash needs. And I think, I believe Richard Perkins asked a similar question to what I'm gonna ask, which is, did he look at other periods, time periods longer than the single largest drawdown in a given day? Was there also a similar examination for the largest amount of a drawdown over a week, over a month, or various periods more than a day, given that this bond portfolio has a maturity up to 3 years, and if additional reserves are required of their intermediate strategy in the operating fund, that I just wanted the peace of mind of knowing that there is little or no chance of converting an unrealized loss to a realized loss if there were additional funds needed beyond the shorter term operating fund.
And, you know, Mr. Garcia, usually it's been our tradition or in public comment to not necessarily respond or give answers. So if Deputy Counsel Yvonne Navarez-Goodson, if you're there, if you could please give us a little direction here how we can help Mr. Garcia with his question, or if we can get him information offline.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yvonne Navarez-Goodson, for the record. Under public comment, the chair has discretion to allow members of the body to ask questions or respond to public comment, simply can't deliberate or take action. So it would be within the discretion of the chair to authorize Mr. Klinger to respond, or alternatively, he could respond offline.
Thank you. CFO Klinger, if you're prepared for an answer for Mr. Garcia, that'd be wonderful. If not, let me know if you need to do some research and get back to him later.
Chair DeBrava, for the record, CFO Klinger to Member Garcia. We did look at that, and Mr. Garcia, I can send you some more specific information if that would be helpful.
Thank you. Not necessary at all. I just wanted to have an understanding that looking at it from that additional perspective was also taken. Thank you. Appreciate it both to you and Chairman DeBrava.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Is there any other public comment in Las Vegas?
None in Las Vegas, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Winter. Thank you, everybody. This concludes the Investment Committee meeting. We are adjourned. Thank you.